Hello and welcome everyone to the next installment of the SUAS News Podcast Series, where we interview newsmakers and discuss the news and applications relevant to the global unmanned technologies community. I'm your program host, Patrick Egan, and as we always do at this time, let's say hello and welcome to our co-host, Mr. Gene Robinson.
Hello, Mr. Egan. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, you know. I'm warm, I'm dry. It's been wet out here, but it's been nice. We need the rain. How about yourself? With anything else?
Well,
you have anything new here?
I will have to apologize in advance to all our listeners. I know I sound like Mabel, your Aunt Mabel that, you know, smoked for 40 years, but I was in the high desert up there for a week, and then I came back down and got diverted right to the border to fly a mission down there, and I got to tell you, the desert and the dust apparently doesn't agree with me.
Lots of dust in the desert.
To say the least.
Yes, yes. So, as we always do, I'm looking for some commentary from you for any news stories you might have, you know, come across this week. Anything catch your eye, or were you just out of reach of the new media, as it were?
Well, I wasn't totally out of reach, and I got to tell you, one thing that I am noticing a trend on is I think the bloom is off the rose when it comes to quad rotors. I think everybody knows now that, you know, you've got it's a limited capability set there that works well in the short term. But I think I see a swing back to the fixed wing side of it. Now, granted, there's a lot of fixed wings that are coming out hybrid, but by the same token, I think that people are realizing that if you want to go more than an hour, you're going to have a fixed wing. And I see that pendulum swinging back.
Well, it's funny. I was at this drone educator conference last Saturday, week ago, and the people from Parrot were there, and they had their disco. And I was like, you know, so how are you guys getting traction with this? Or are you getting pushback from a community that doesn't even recognize that as a drone because it doesn't have four propellers on it? And, you know, he says, well, it's funny that you say that because we are hearing that. People, that's not a drone. So I don't know. It's kind of funny. It was all quadcopters. I'm really, you know, right tool for the job. I think, you know, what have you've been saying for years that the wing is the thing, but, you know, it depends on what you're doing. So, yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting observation, and I agree with it. Anything else catch your story or your eye this week?
Well, you know, the Fuhrer seems to be dying down somewhat now with 107 being out and all the hysteria that we had before. I think from a regulatory standpoint, everybody is kind of getting into the groove now. The deal with, you know, having to apply for the NOTAM is starting to get smoother. And we haven't had any issue with it. I know that my guys with Drone Pilot Inc. went and did a critical infrastructure shoot. And they got their NOTAM in 12 hours. So, you know, that's reasonable for a commercial operation, and I think that, you know, you got to hand it to the FAA. They're coming around and getting things done. You know, I was a little concerned, of course, in what I do, the search and rescue and law enforcement kind of thing, 12 hours is still not enough. And I'm still a little concerned that, you know, I can't call up the tower and say, hey, guys, we got an op in your area, and they say, okay, go ahead. And you know, the last time I called, they said, oh, we need to transfer you over to this guy. And this guy's phone was busy.
Yeah. Well, I that's funny, too, that you are, you know, throwing some kudos the way of the FAA because, you know, I did that. I wrote a story about it. People, oh, my God, what are you doing? You know, it's like, well, you know, it's not perfect, but it's a lot better than it could have been. So you have to throw them, you know, a good job, some kudos their way. They, you know, it's tough, you know. Is it everything? No. Is it everything everybody wanted? No. But I don't really think it's that bad. Now I'm starting to see what I've been calling the conjecture merchants. You have a lot of people that have been talking about, oh, this is going to happen and that's going to happen. Oh, what are we going to do here? Hey, they've become irrelevant. You know, in my book, you're either a 101 or a 107, and you know, there's a path to fly, get authorization, path to get waivers. You know, is it all working fine and dandy? Well, you know, but it's coming along. And the people that were making money on all the questions and whatnot, I think that's kind of that's over. They're going to be looking for new jobs.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are a lot of people got gaffed. It's kind of a funny thing, you know, talking to people as this deal is kind of unfolded. And there's kind of like a BCAD thing with the 107. And as this thing is unfolded, there's a lot of people, the phone has been ringing. Not that I'm tooting my own horn, but people were like, wow, you know, people said you were mad at the world, but you were actually kind of right about this stuff. So, well, you know, just kind of as I see it, I think that there's a lot of people. The next 6 months to 18 months ought to be pretty interesting. I think that, you know, there's a lot of companies out there that were drone startups that are looking for relevance who really don't have anything. You know, and I've been kind of beating up on people too. There's more regulatory stuff going on, and we have people, let's say, interfacing with the government that shouldn't be there, in my estimation, because they their companies are failed, or they don't even have a drone company. They don't even have a software company. They got nothing. They don't have any paying customers. They got a basically what amounts to a BS story. And that is starting to my goat is starting to get got on that one. I don't really know what to do. You know, I was thinking I'd just kind of hang up the whole advocacy thing. But now I'm thinking that I'd have to ride back in on that one. We'll have to see what happens. But, you know, overall, I think for the end user, it's good. For business, I think it's good. I do think it's kind of interesting. I don't know if you saw that, but Trimble kind of got out of the game. That's storytelling.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I still think they'll be in it with the software part of it. But to me, it's like, obviously, somebody figured out, they're a big company, a lot of smart people. Hey, you know, maybe we could make more money doing something else. What do you think?
There's no question about it. The big guys are figuring out that the hardware part of it, you know, they're just trucks. When you get right down to it, they're data trucks. And if you want to be in the truck selling business, then, you know, that's one thing. You need to focus on it. You need to drive to it, no pun intended. But, they're going to fall back to software. That's what's been their bread and butter, you know, just listening for that signal coming down and telling you where you're at.
Yeah, it's probably a little bit easier, too, you know, than, you know, there's like the whole 2D, 3D, you know, people talk about like driverless cars or driverless trucks or automatic, you know, that's, you know, I can pull over on the side of the road in the sky, kind of gravity kicks in, physics, crashy, you know, it's tough. But anyway, well, let's move along and introduce our guest, Mr. Bill Carey. You out there, Bill?
Yes, I am, Patrick.
He's the author of Enter the Drones, the FAA and UAVs in America. And, you know, I got a copy, an advance copy of your book, Bill. And I will say, you know, congratulations for getting published by Shipper. They make great books, real quality, heirloom piece, as I would call them. So, yeah, I mean, that was a win. How'd that come about? They just, you pitch it and they go for it, or?
Yeah, you
love drones.
You submit a proposal to them that they evaluate and get back to you whether or not they're interested in publishing, and they did in this case, which I was grateful for.
Well, and so that would lead me into question number one, which I usually ask people is, you know, if you could give us a little bio, how you became involved with the unmanned aircraft subject, and obviously they must have had something going on to pitch a book and these guys to pick it up. So maybe you can elucidate.
Sure. First of all, Patrick and Gene, it's a real honor and privilege to be here with you guys, two real pioneers of the industry. I started my professional life as a newspaper reporter, and for the past 10 years I've worked in the aviation trade press based in Washington, D.C. I'm a little bit different than than other trade press reporters in that I'm kind of a generalist, and I covered both commercial aviation and the military, so I was aware of, you know, developments on either side of those two industries as to what was happening with unmanned aircraft. I also had on at least an annual basis been attending the annual conference of the Association of Unmanned Vehicle Systems International, which I'm sure you gentlemen are very familiar with. It started, you know, in its early days as more of a military-focused trade organization, but it's gradually evolved into, you know, sort of a hybrid military-commercial type event. I also was following an organization that's not very well known outside of the Beltway, but is very influential, and that's RTCA, which Patrick, again, I know you're familiar with. They had been involved since 2004 in drafting regulations that would allow large predator-sized unmanned aircraft into the national airspace system. So I've been kind of monitoring what they were doing. That was, they originally started out a committee called Special Committee 203 that was looking into that. But around, I think it was around 2011, 2012 timeframe, there was this real bow wave of small unmanned aircraft, you know, entering into the system, either legally or otherwise, that was creating a problem with the FAA, and it begged the question of where the heck is this small unmanned aircraft systems rule that they've been promising to release since, I think it was 2007 timeframe, and which finally presented itself as Part 107 in August of this year. So that's kind of what kind of drew me into the whole situation, and I thought there was history being made here and that somebody should put it on paper.
Well, I would agree with all that. And yes, I am familiar with all of that. I was on the RTCA thing, the 203, and there was a small subcommittee on smalls, which I was a member of, which, you know, I don't know if you ever heard that part of the story, but the guy that they made the chairperson for the small subcommittee was actually the representative from ALPA. You know, nobody really floated that to me prior to his, let's say, appointment. And at that point, there was a copious amount of grousing by yours truly, because I thought that was a total family program. It was BS. Yeah. But anyway, yes, I am aware of that. I did both the ASTM and FRTCA and left both of those in a huff. You know, but you are right. The RTCA is well known to inside the Beltway and is one of the groups that the FAA uses. So I understand, you know, it sounds like you're into aviation. You know, are you one of the guys that see, just even a few years ago, people were laughing at unmanned aircraft. How did you see them? Did you see them as the future of aviation, or were you laughing and snickering at the sideshow?
No, I definitely wasn't laughing at the sideshow. I came at it from kind of the traditional aviation industry perspective, and the book itself is more a Washington, D.C. centric type look at how the industry evolved. I was just interested in them as gadgets, really, but they seem to be consuming a lot of the FAA's attention. And just your mention of the fellow from the Airline Pilots Association kind of leading a working group on small unmanned aircraft systems, you know, they brought traditional aviation groups, aviation interests into it early on. And I think the FAA would prefer or would have preferred a few years ago that drones just disappear. But given that they're not going anywhere, in fact, they're multiplying, the FAA has decided to take ownership and draw in these other traditional aviation groups like the Airline Pilots Association and Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association and, you know, other well-known aviation groups.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, they are stakeholders, you know. There's I've got a running joke about, you know, there's a fine line between stakeholder and bag holder. But those guys, you know, most of them are doing their livelihood in the sky. And, you know, realizing that early, being, let's say, an early advocate of the commercial drone thing, most of these guys had no idea what, you know, they'd only seen a Scan Eagle or a Predator or Reaper or, you know, they didn't know what it was. Had no idea what the operations and applications were. It was a real uphill battle. But it is kind of funny, you know, flashing back to that RTCA and that gentleman, who's a friend of mine, he's a nice guy, you know, but I will say there were a long list of him telling me, you will never. And, you know, at the time I said, well, you know, never is a kind of a long time. And with the 107, there's a lot of stuff in there that I heard we will never, you know.
Right.
So I'm, you know, we talked about that kind of in the beginning. I'm kind of happy about that. I'm okay with it, you know. Anything you'd like to interject, Gene?
Well, no, I've been over here quietly keeping my coughing fits under the mute button, but
well, you were on this early, so I'm sure you got some perspective.
I shared a lot of your frustrations. Actually, we commiserated together on many of the things that went down in the RTCA and the apparent unwillingness to listen to common sense. And that's why I'm really interested in this book, to see, you know, some of the details that you've gathered that we've lived. So I think that's going to be a very interesting comparison for me.
Well, and, you know, I will say, I mean, you Bill, you did a good job. You know, you really captured a lot of stuff. It must have been a big project for you.
Yeah, it was, and it was a moving target as well. You know, I actually turned in the first draft of this book, I think it was January 2015, and then so much happened since then, including the release of the draft Part 107 rule, that I asked for the manuscript back and updated it to bring us up to, you know, through 2015 anyway.
Well, yeah, and, you know, as I mean, that people have said, oh, you know, you should write a book, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, you're going to have to, you know, make volumes. It's be like, okay, well, we've got this set and this set. Because it does, it just changes so much. And then there's the historical perspective that comes back into it to these things that happen and why they happen and all the rest of that. It's like a made-for-television movie right there with, you know.
Yeah, you know, I think there was. There was definitely some drama there, and most of the literature, at least up until 2014, 2015 or so, concerned, you know, the military's use of drones, the ethics of targeted drone strikes, and that was kind of all the public, you know, knew or was aware of, and again, that was motivation for me to try to document what was happening in terms of allowing commercial drones into the airspace.
Yeah, that was a tragedy. You know, you mentioned the one group show. I mean, I tried to drag those people kicking and screaming since about 2008 to try and turn the focus off of the military drones and go commercial, and they just would not have it. Mm-hmm. You know, and for me, always being, you know, I did during this get some military experience with both the Navy and the Army. I didn't have a military background. I was a business guy, and I'm like, man, we are just missing the boat here. But, you know, prior to sequestration, everyone was fat, dumb, and happy. The checks were rolling in. The checkbooks were open over at the DOD. And, you know, it was an easy trough to hit. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's too bad, but whatever. Now, you know, we talked about it's kind of a moving target and all the rest of that. The book was good. I do have a problem, though, and it's kind of a cowbell issue, that there's just not enough Egan in here for me. No.
Patrick, I think, you know, the volume two, if there ever is one, would be the West Coast-centric view of what's happening out there, and that's where you're based, and I think you know, that's really driving what's happening in the industry. You know, Silicon Valley and Intel and, you know, some of the bigger companies.
It is now. Unfortunately, you know, we missed a lot of the early boat. You know, there's a lot of hand wringing now. Oh, you know, we need to do this. We gotta fly beyond visual line of sight, and I want to go to the moon and all. You know, okay, well, you know, let's get. I mean, I think there's a lot to work with there. We could get started. You know, that's another thing. I mean, I don't know if you follow me on the Twitter, but I'm a little critical of the high tech people. You know, some of the military people have come out and they have been working for some of the tech companies, and I think that's a mistake because they're not really commercial people. And we did see this where Dr. Voss left Google, and wasn't so much of a leaving as you're out of here, pal. But I think when you look at the technology people and they're like, oh, you know, we're going to save the world with drones. It's going to be, oh, God, we're going to do this and this. And then it comes down to candy bars on a string and delivering burritos and stuff. Just making in my estimation, you're not making yourself look very good.
No, I agree. I mean, I think that aspect of where the industry's going may, you know, it's the highest profile, you know, the Amazons and the Googles and UPS and whatnot. But I think that'll be, you know, follow up on other more promising industry segments. I don't see, you know, Amazon octocopters, hexcopters, quadcopters, whatever, you know, delivering packages to your doorstep anytime soon.
Well, it's I've told people this. I've said, hey, look, you really want to do this, and you're an aviation guy, okay? You know, that's even me. I'm not really an aviation guy. I've become this aviation guy. But the thing is, you know, people are like, well, you know, what could these guys do? Okay, hey, you know, Bezos is smart. You know, he did the Cyber Monday. We're going to deliver stuff with drones. It went all around the world. Everybody was talking about Amazon. They probably sold a boatload of stuff, okay? But my thing is, if somebody, well, you know, what do you think? Okay, you know, you want me to start a drone program for you? It doesn't look like Prime Air. That just, they right. You know, they go, oh, look, we got aircraft. And we go back to the stakeholders, the aviation stakeholders. That doesn't look like an aircraft. They may not say anything to you because they're not as outspoken as I am, but they're snickering under their breath that that's not an aircraft, that that's not, well, again, family show. You know, okay, hey, you want to get into the commercial aviation world? Let's crack open the checkbook, 500 mil. I'm going to go out. We're going to find people to design an aircraft that can do this safely and repeatably, and something that's certifiable. And then we're going to go, you know, we're going to certify the software, DO-178B or one of the variants, everything that interacts with the autopilot software, blah, blah, blah. And that might cost you more than the 500 mil to get all of the certification or whatever else. We're going to get something totally together. Then we're going to go to the FAA and the stakeholders and say, hey, we want a waiver to fly beyond visual line of sight to deliver our Lonesome Dove DVD sets. What do you think?
No, I agree completely. You know, the FAA has, as Gene noted, you know, become more flexible, and under Part 107 now it's doling out a lot of waivers. But yeah, I mean, I think one of the important facets of that regulation is they're not requiring small unmanned aircraft to be certified to manned aircraft standards, which, as you know, would be really just prohibitive for, you know, small companies to get involved in the industry. So they're allowing commercial off-the-shelf consumer, prosumer-type drones that DJI and Unique and other companies are producing that can perform commercial missions. And I think that was key to, you know, to making the industry happen.
All right, well, you're an industry guy, but, you know, so the thing is, I mean, here's my thing with Amazon, right? If Amazon doesn't try and certify their aircraft or do an equivalent level of certification or something else, I mean, the liability of, you know, being, let's say, you know, somebody's child or whatever getting hit by an Amazon drone, I mean, what do you think the ramifications of that are going to be?
You know, I think that they're through the Micro UAS Aviation Rulemaking Committee. They looked into the probability of, you know, a small object the size of a drone, you know, hitting somebody, and found that, you know, that was a pretty low probability, and that's what allowed them to go forward. I mean, certainly the insurance industry is getting involved because there will be, third-party liability associated with operating unmanned aircraft, small unmanned aircraft. So if you want to have a viable commercial business, I think you're going to have to, design that to industry standards and have insurance to back you up.
Oh, yeah, and in Amazon's case, probably lots of insurance,
Yeah. But again, I see in terms of delivery drones, I see the model of Zipline, which is delivering medicine in Rwanda, and Flirty, which has, demonstrated that it can, make targeted deliveries. And even UPS, I think, recently announced that it was making medicine deliveries off the coast of Massachusetts. I mean, I think that's where the package delivery segment will go, to remote locations that are otherwise not practical using manned aircraft or any other means of transportation. But again, I just don't see Amazon quadcopters in your neighborhood anytime soon. I don't think they are designing a quadcopter. I think it's more of a multi-rotor system than four rotors.
Well, probably going to need that. But, even the medical delivery, I talked to Matternet when they first started. I just was at another thing in Silicon Valley here with people that are VC investors, and they were talking about that. And, I have to be honest. It's a great concept, but the aircraft have to be really reliable. Mm-hmm. And I've said this early on, and for many years, if you go and you're going to be in business with pharmaceutical companies and you're going to deliver these things, you're going to have to deliver 99.999999% of the time, because if it doesn't make it and somebody dies, you're going to get sued and you're going to have a black eye and people aren't going to want to deal with you. Now, even at this thing I was just at a couple weeks ago, to be fair, okay, these companies go out and they go to countries where the business model is going to work. But, currently in developing countries, they have a kid on a Chinese motorcycle. He rides around and he makes these deliveries. He also has the capability of carrying someone on the back who can administer inoculations or draw blood, make tests, blah, blah, blah. And, I'd ask, well, how does that factor in? And even one woman from Singularity University said, hey, we even had to go as far and look at competition with a kid and a donkey. that's going to be hard to beat, So I do think that there are some applications for that. But some of that's really going to be hard to beat. Sometimes I draw the analogy between the Tom's shoes, Hey, we're giving free shoes to kids in the third world, and then the cobblers go out of business and his family starves. Just keeps right going and giving.
It has to be, either profitable or foundation supported or something.
Yeah, well, that's even Zipline's got a good thing. The model, to me, reminds me of the Shadow system model, which you got this big footprint and the thing drops stuff with a parachute. And I notice they have the little V thing out on the nose. And if they're going to do that, 50s down pilot pickup system or, how that's all going to work, I don't know. But, we'll see how this unfolds. But, do I think that Bill and Melinda Gates are getting their foundation money back? Not anytime soon. But anyway, whatever on that. We've kind of digressed, but it still is relevant to the book thing. So you mentioned a lot of people in here. It's like almost going to a big, drone get together or show or whatever. And you've got a lot of people in here that.
Hello, Patrick. I think I lost you.
Yeah, I think Patrick fell off. So let's go ahead and pick this up just in case he has had a technical difficulty. I think what he was leading to is that it was a who's who of people in the book. Would you like to comment about some of the more colorful people that you might have run into while you were doing this?
Sure. Well, Gene, you have a cameo mentioned in the book for your work with Texas Equisearch. And how that came to be an issue with the FAA, and I think the famed drone attorney Brendan Shulman represented Texas Equisearch in that situation. Of course, Patrick is quoted fairly extensively in the book, And you know, present and former FAA officials